Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app to listen to Business Wars early and ad-free. You probably felt the pinch at the pump. Gas prices have been going up, fueled by global unrest, the pandemic, and inflation. Add to that growing concerns about climate, and car makers are seeing a spike in interest in electric vehicles. Tesla's long led the pack, but now the big-name traditional automakers are angling for a piece of the pie, too. Granted, that pie is, at least for now, rather slim. It's expected to rise to 5% of the total marketplace in 2022 by the end of this year. Traditional automakers like Ford, VW, Volvo, and BMW are all rolling out electric sedans. You'll see them on the road soon. Got vans and trucks and buses. They're going to be all electric versions of some iconic and beloved lines. But as more players enter the game, will the variety of offerings from the trusted makers of gas guzzlers really expand the market? Or is the hype overblown? And will Tesla maintain its lead or get out-innovated? Well, this week we're joined by Insider editor Alex Davies and comedian Josh Gondelman to look back at some of our best stories about the electric vehicle market from our sister program, Business Wars Daily. And we'll be looking ahead to our next season on Tesla versus Detroit. Stick around for the best of Business Wars Daily.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is the best of Business Wars Daily. Great to have you with us. We hope you caught our first episode last month. We were talking about the influence of technology on the real estate market. But if you're tuning into our new program for the first time, well, we're taking a broader look at the business world and how it affects you. And in this new format, we have both experts and comedians weighing in. Today, I'm talking about the future of the automobile with Alex Davies, an editor at Insider and the author of Driven, The Race to Create the Autonomous Car. Also joining us, Josh Gondelman. He is head writer of Showtime's Desus and Mero. Josh, tell us a little bit about Desus and Mero.
Oh, sure. It's a late night show, 11 o'clock on Thursdays on Showtime. It is very extemporaneous. Desus and Mero are a comedy team. They're both from the Bronx. They're so funny, very improvisational, very like, I think a little bit more loose and freewheeling than some of the other late night shows. And I think it's a really good time. I'm really excited for this season.
Very cool. I have to ask you, since we're talking about electric vehicles, do you drive one?
I don't. I mean, I would if I got behind the wheel. I'm not prejudiced against electric vehicles. I'm just vehicle-less at this moment. I'm not like petroleum all the way.
Alex, tell us a little bit more about what you do at Insider.
Sure. At Insider, I am the editor of our transportation section. We cover the future of automobiles. We cover logistics. We write about aviation and space startups. And I am also the author of a book called Driven, The Race to Create the Autonomous Car, which I think of as the origin story of an industry that's still in the process of being born. And that just came out in paperback.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. That's spectacular. Yeah, yeah, really. Well, let's talk a little bit about the state of the art, as it were, when it comes to electric vehicles. Oh, I didn't ask you, Alex. Do you drive an electric vehicle?
I do. I drive a used Chevrolet Volt. Volt with a V. That's the plug-in hybrid.
Uh-huh.
So not quite ready to go full electric. I still like being able to have the gas engine for drives out to the Sierras for camping trips. But day-to-day, I'm all electric.
Well, as a Chevy Volt driver, perhaps you'll be interested in this. General Motors, which makes the Volt, as well as other Chevy vehicles, Buick vehicles, Cadillac, GMC trucks, GM isn't just dipping its toe into the EV market. They're jumping in head first. I want you to check out a clip from a recent episode of Business Wars Daily. That's right. If all goes according to plan, GM's fleet will be all electric by 2035. It was a move that caught the industry by surprise, especially because GM sold only one electric vehicle at the time. The company says it plans to invest $35 billion in electric vehicles, or EVs, and autonomous vehicles called AVs within the next 4 years, which is more than it will spend on gas and diesel vehicles. The money will be used to retool existing factories, build new ones, retrain its labor force, and unveil new vehicle prototypes. While the announcement made GM the first Big Five automaker to flip the switch to electric vehicles, the industry has been making moves to be greener to combat climate change. Transportation makes up more than a quarter of the greenhouse gas emissions that are driving climate change, making it the largest contributor to the problem, according to the Washington Post. Barry Rabe, a University of Michigan public policy professor, told the Post, quote, "This is a very significant pivot, especially for such an iconic American institution." But the movement toward an electric vehicle future has an unexpected detractor, Toyota. Yes, the maker of the Prius, which is pretty much synonymous with eco-friendly cars, is trying to put the brakes on the EV revolution. In June, Toyota representatives held a series of closed-door meetings with members of Congress to plead their case, the New York Times reports. Toyota has also been opposing stricter car emissions in markets around the world, going so far as to sue Mexico over fuel efficiency rules and argue against carbon taxes in Japan. Influence Map, a think tank that tracks corporate climate lobbying, gave Toyota a D-minus grade, with one analyst telling The Times that the company is a, quote, industry laggard on climate change leadership. While that may seem odd, Toyota's got a big reason. It might have bet on the wrong technology. The company has been focused on gas-electric hybrids like the Prius and the development of cars powered by electricity from hydrogen fuel cells rather than batteries. The company unveiled the second generation of its Mirai sedan in December, but now that its peers are focused on EVs, which run on batteries that are cheaper to produce than fuel cells that turn hydrogen into electricity, such a rapid shift in the market could leave Toyota in the dust. Well, that's a lot to absorb there, because first of all, you have the news that GM plans to invest $35 billion in EV on autonomous vehicles. Alex, can you put that in some kind of perspective for us? I mean, it sounds like a lot of money to me.
I think that means it's pretty much all in. And the thing that really surprised me with GM was less even the money number, although it's big, but when they actually put a date on it, they said 2035, no more gas vehicles.
Yeah,
and they've been talking for years before that, we're going to phase out gas. I'm like, sure, in the next 3 to 4 centuries. And then when they actually put a date on it, I said, okay, well, now they've actually got something to work against.
That brings us to the question of demand. And I'm curious, is the demand there, I guess, is my question, for EVs in particular? What's your take? Josh, I mean, you've got your finger on the pulse of America. What's your sense?
Oh my gosh, I'm a Jewish comedy writer who lives in New York City. I don't know what anyone thinks in the rest of the country, and they do not hesitate to tell me that. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I hope there is the case, and it does seem like what you were bringing up before with Toyota, like, blocking these rules, it means, like, they think there is the potential for that demand. If Toyota didn't think that they were up against a problem, they would go like, sure, regulate away. So it seems like they think, like you said, they're going to be left in the dust, right? So there must be someone leaving them in the dust, presumably the people selling the electric cars.
Yeah, I'll, Let me say this about demand. One, sales are steadily climbing. I remember a couple of years ago, I'd have to write the line, EVs make up just about 1% of annual car sales. And these days I'm writing, EVs make up about 2% of annual car sales. So it's steadily climbing. And I think the offerings are getting better and more varied. And people are slowly getting more into electric cars. But I think to really juice the demand, it's not really like the carrot and the stick. The carrot would be incentives. You get HOV access, which is like the main reason to buy an electric car in California. Rebates, and you get money off. And then there's not so much a stick, really. And I think the stick has got to be, there is no food but carrots. You can only buy an electric car.
You're awfully mean with that stick there, Alex. I mean, I never thought about using it to beat up somebody, but that's what you sort of seem to be suggesting there. Isn't the real sticking point? I mean, if we're going to be really honest about this, doesn't this, at the end of the day, come down to range anxiety, range anxiety, range anxiety? If you can't find a way to charge your vehicle, or if you got to wait 8 hours to charge it overnight, or, you know, you got to trickle charge it. Isn't that what's holding back this industry more than anything else? Alex, what's your take?
Yeah, it's range anxiety. That's the reason I bought a plug-in hybrid instead of a fully electric car, is because every once in a while I like to do a trip that would take me out of the range of a normal car, and I don't want to be stranded in the mountains. And you know, I always use my parents as the test case. I've been trying to convince them to go electric for years, and they don't go anywhere. You know, they're the perfect people. They drive like 15 miles a week. So I do think like that's what's really holding people back.
Well, you know, Toyota's strategy, they're thinking that hydrogen fuel cells are the way to go, that you just can't put up enough charging stations quickly enough to make this work. But Toyota has been working on this technology. Is it ready for prime time? From what you can tell, Alex?
No, not particularly. Hydrogen fuel cell cars work. The problem is that there's no hydrogen. Like, you can't. California is the place with the most hydrogen fueling stations, and it's like 10.
Oh wow!
And so it's just the problem with switching over to either of these technologies is that you're fighting against more than a century, not just of habit building, but of infrastructure building, right? There are gas stations everywhere. We know how to get gasoline everywhere. We do it. Electricity is easier because the grid is everywhere. You just need to install a charging station. But for hydrogen to work, you have to figure out how to get hydrogen everywhere where someone might want to fill up a car. And that's the real sticking point.
Alex, In the clip we heard, it was mentioned that the GM put down a big bet on electric vehicles and autonomous vehicles. And to me, that sounds like they're saying we're putting down a ton of money on both vacuum cleaners and robot butlers, being like one thing that you're like, oh yeah, this exists and it can be better. And then one thing that you're like, I don't know if anyone's made one of these work right yet. And you've literally written the book on that. So like, how does that play to you? Are you like, oh, this is something that's imminent? Or are you like, oh, this is like kind of a fantasy still?
It's somewhere between imminent and a fantasy.
Okay.
I think it's real. And I think in the next couple of years, you're going to be able to ride in like a robotaxi in extremely limited conditions.
Sure.
Probably just in like very circumscribed spaces and in good conditions, and who knows how much it'll cost you. But I will say, like, the thing that worried me most, more than anything about writing a book, was not like, they're going to spell my name wrong on the cover, or this is terrible. It's just, am I writing about something that's complete nonsense? And I did like periodically ask myself that, and I was like, well, I'm in it now. They gave me the advance, so I've got to turn it in. But no, I do think it's real. I think it's going to come out very slowly and much more slowly than people hoped a few years ago. Electric cars, on the other hand, are very real and very doable.
You know, we need to take a quick break, but I want to sort of plant a seed in both of your heads, because I know that there are a lot of listeners who feel very intense, shall we say, about particular brands. And Tesla is a big part of this story. And think about, what is the best, if you were buying an EV today, what would you go for? And then we'll just hold that thought. We're talking vacuum cleaners and robot butlers and electric vehicles with Josh Gondelman. He's head writer of Showtime's Desus and Mero, and Alex Davies, transportation editor at Insider and the author of Driven, The Race to Create the Autonomous Car. It's a special edition of Business Wars Daily, the best of Business Wars Daily, and we'll be right back. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. You're listening to the best of Business Wars Daily. I'm David Brown, and joining us on this special episode, Alex Davies. He is transportation editor at Insider and the author of Driven, The Race to Create the Autonomous Car. Also joining us, Josh Gondelman. He is head writer of Showtime's Desus and Mero. Last April, we ran a story on Business Wars Daily about Volkswagen's ill-fated April Fool's Day joke that could have turned into a full-blown SEC probe. The venerable German automaker announced a rebrand to Volkswagen and perpetuated the prank to multiple media outlets. You know, that would have been pretty harmless if Volkswagen's stock price didn't shoot up on the news of the EV rebrand, but that's what happened. VW's commitment to going electric isn't just a marketing gimmick. They really do want to go toe-to-toe with Tesla. Let's check out a Business Wars Daily episode from last April. Last month, Wall Street Journal columnist Dan Neal took Volkswagen's new ID.4 for a spin and said Tesla has nothing to worry about. The ID.4 is 5 years behind the comparable Tesla, Neal wrote, and the engineering betrays a premature rush to market. Harsh words for Volkswagen, which of course has been angling of late to compete directly with Tesla. Both automakers plan to open new European factories for their electric vehicles. And Volkswagen Group CEO Herbert Diess said on Twitter that competing with Tesla's planned German factory would be, quote, a huge challenge, unquote. A huge challenge that likely won't be aided by Volkswagen's April Fool's shenanigans. Josh, VW has been through the ringer on a lot of things. I mean, not just the whole Volkswagen thing, but of course, remember Dieselgate? People used to think of Volkswagen as cute and cuddly, the little Beetle and the microbus and all that kind of stuff. What's your sense of the vibe that VW has in the marketplace?
I think my main association with Volkswagen present day is when I get one at a rental car place going, is this diesel? How would I know? I hope I don't ruin this car when I fill it up with gas. So for that reason, I think their push into electric cars is like a perfect move for them because it would really take a lot of anxiety off of my mind.
I'm curious, Alex, have you checked out one of Volkswagen's electric vehicles yet?
I have not driven the ID.4. So I can't say if it's like really behind Tesla, but I do know that Tesla does a particularly good job of getting a lot of range out of its batteries. They use software really well. They mm-hmm. make really good electric cars as long as they don't like fall apart, which they kind of do a lot of the time. But the core of the car is really good. It's the build quality is bad. And that's why I think like Volkswagen can definitely challenge Tesla here, just like all of the other big automakers can, because they really know how to make cars. They're really good at that. They're really good at making lots and lots of cars. It just takes time and money. And, you know, maybe it's a 5-year gap, but this is a game you play over decades.
I mean, this is just, again, I'm an amateur, but I'm chiming in anyway, just out of blind confidence. But to me, it feels like there is the potential for a classic Oreo Hydrox situation, right? Hydrox, an original sandwich cookie, Oreo comes from behind. Now that they've both existed for decades, nobody cares or knows which one came first, right? It's which one tastes better and which one is more convenient.
I love your comparisons. I'm thinking I need a robot butler to bring me a Hydrox cookie or something like that. By the way, I saw Volkswagen's latest offering. I don't know if you guys have seen it yet, but it is a microbus. Just a few days ago, the trade press reported that the microbus, the favorite of hippies and yippies and, you know, it was beloved once upon a time, is going to be back. But I will say that it looks like it's a little newfangled. It looks like it's trying too hard to be both modern and retro. I mean, what's your sense of that, Alex? Can a brand and an association with a past, can that kind of, you know, Ford's sort of doing that with the Mustang, aren't they? I mean, they're trying to use the brand name just to kind of boost interest.
Ford did that with a car they call the Mustang Mach-E, which I actually just got to drive and had a blast in. It's a really lovely car, but after we had this for a week, I was talking to my husband and I referred to it. I was like, oh yeah, I give back the Mustang today. And he's like, what Mustang? So they could stick the name on there, but the association doesn't really make any sense there. I think VW's got a stronger play with the bus, and I think they are going to capture a lot of people who are interested in that. And they're probably not going to want to sell that many of these things anyway. It's going to be kind of a new sort of halo car, a bit of a statement for like these, you know, eco families who are, you know, driving around Venice Beach and these things.
I think that's right. I don't think that many people, like, regardless of the fuel source, not that many people in 2022 want a VW microbus to begin with, right, Alex? So it's like, it is kind of a fun, exciting gimmick to do, but it's like not what's going to move the most models, I imagine.
No, and that's why they call this a halo car, a car that is there for reputation. It's there to be seen and for people to think about, oh, like VW, they've got that electric microbus. Let me see what they have that seems reasonable and for me.
So this could perhaps be a halo car for Volkswagen, but maybe not the future of the electric vehicle.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. You know, I'd live in Texas, and in fact, not too far from my house, Elon Musk has a new factory going up, and he plans to build a truck in it. Perhaps you guys have heard of the Cybertruck. Had a somewhat inglorious introduction. Alex, were you there at that introduction by any wild chance?
No, I was not. Tesla stopped inviting me to their events after a while. but I did watch it live, and I was shocked, I'll have to say. I think a lot of people really love the Cybertruck. It's not really my style, and I'll be interested to see if they can ever actually build the thing or get that thing through crash testing.
But the truck part of it seems to be heating up and really, really fast. I can think of three trucks that already have waiting lists for them. What's going on?
Everyone loves pickup trucks. They are the best-selling vehicles in this country by far. The Cybertruck is a really particular case because it doesn't look especially functional. And I think the people who have been buying like Ford F-150s for 20 years, it's hard for me to imagine that they really want the Cybertruck. That to me feels like people just love Tesla so much, and they love the almost like avant-garde ridiculous nature of it, that they're like, I want that thing, because that is a statement.
I guess judging from commercials, it's the music of John Mellencamp and Dennis Leary's voice is what'll sell a truck. And I think, like, when presented with this alternative as an option, I imagine people will adapt, right? I think, like, as Alex was saying earlier, if the stick is here's your carrots, this is all you get, then I think regulation will move some people over. But I do imagine there being some reluctance to, for people who don't want an electric truck, believing that electricity is for nerds.
Let's put a pin in this discussion about trucks, because there's a whole lot more to mine right here with Alex Davies, transportation editor at Insider and the author of Driven, the Race to Create the Autonomous Car, and with Josh Gondelman. He's head writer of Showtime's Desus and Mero. We're talking electric vehicles, and there's more of the Best of Business Wars Daily coming up. Stay with us.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
We get support from Quart. You know, the way people work is changing, and the workplace itself needs to change too. But what if flexibility wasn't just an option? With Quart's flexible furniture solutions, you can create agile work environments that become your team's greatest advantage. Save capital with swing spaces, attract top talent with collaborative environments, and create connected spaces that employees will love. Flexibility is the future, and Quart Furniture Rental helps you embrace it. Learn more at Quart, that's Quart.com/office. Hey, welcome to a special edition of Business Wars Daily, the Best of Business Wars Daily. We're talking with Alex Davies, transportation editor at Insider and the author of Driven, the Race to Create the Autonomous Car, and Josh Gondelman, the head writer of Showtime's Desus and Mero. Americans, I think it's safe to say, have always looked to the next big thing, emphasis on the word big. For decades now, car consumers have shunned the sedan in favor of larger and larger SUVs, vehicles that can fit families, gear, or just feel luxuriously spacious. And the burgeoning electric vehicle market is no different. This spring, the first all-electric truck debuts. We're not talking about the Cybertruck. We're talking about the Ford F-150 Lightning. Let's take a listen to a recent Business Wars Daily story on the latest front in the EV war. Right now, there are 3 vehicles in Ford's electric fleet. The Mustang Mach-E is a battery-powered crossover SUV. Ford also has an electric transit cargo van. And then there's the aforementioned F-150. Ah, the F-150. As American as apple pie, and by that I mean Americans are obsessed with this pickup. Ford's F-Series vehicle line has been the best-selling line of any kind in the U.S. since the early 1980s, according to The New Yorker. Ford sells an average of about 900,000 gas-powered F-Series trucks in a good year. Compare that with the 500,000-ish Silverado trucks that Chevy sells in an average year, and that should tell you something. The F-150's relative affordability, extended cab, and reliability have made the truck an iconic American classic, according to Motor Biscuit. But will devoted fans of the F-150 actually switch to an electric version? Well, that's the big bet Ford is making. To help lure devotees, the company has designed the Lightning to look almost identical to a gas-powered F-150. And there are a few more perks. Where a traditional engine would be, there's a lockable storage space. Ford execs call it a frunk, as in a front trunk. Should drivers want to use the frunk for reasons other than to hold stuff, like, say, tailgating, it's equipped with a drain to become a makeshift cooler, reports The New Yorker. You could say the Lightning is Ford's latest attempt to catch up with a dominator of the electric vehicle market. You know the one, Tesla. Ford's hoping that keeping the F-150's classic looks and interior features will be enough to sway folks over to the green side. Meanwhile, Tesla's pickup truck? It's kind of doing the opposite. Even though production of Tesla's Cybertruck has been delayed to 2023, a leaked video of an alleged Cybertruck prototype is even some Tesla devotees scratching their heads. The truck looks a bit more like a boxy four-wheeler than a pickup and includes a massive windshield wiper. One outlet went so far as to claim that the Cybertruck looked, quote, goofy as hell. Well, goofy or not, the Cybertruck hype is real. Tesla reportedly has 3 million orders for it already. And yes, that's before the prototype has been finalized. See, what do I know? I mean, the Cybertruck doesn't look like a truck to me, but then again, I'm from Texas. You know, I'm wondering how many of those orders are from people who are already Tesla fans. I don't know. I mean, and of course, they keep a tight lid on this to begin with. But how much of this is about people who have already bought into the whole idea on the Cybertruck side versus, say, people who didn't think they'd ever want an electric vehicle, but now this Ford pickup, heck, you can reverse the electricity and it can power your house. I mean, that's something that Ford is actually advertising with the Lightning, that if you, you know, are in a one of these things we also have in Texas, which is a massive power outage, you can plug the truck in and you're good to go for a while. What do you think about that, Alex?
It's hard to tell just how many people want this thing who aren't already electric vehicle fans, but I do think this is Ford's big bid to make that next push, to push past those 2% of car buyers who only want electric. This is the bid to actually break into the mass market, and it's definitely, if any vehicle is going to do it, I think this makes a lot of sense. And also, electric pickups make a lot of sense in and of themselves. They have fantastic torque. A lot of trucks that are actually used as work trucks drive relatively set routes, so you know when you're going to be able to charge them and how you're going to be able to charge them. And I think the ability to move electricity from the vehicle to the house, like, that seems a nice bonus, because what happened in Texas last year was pretty terrifying.
There was sort of a conversation. I read about it in the New York Times. Perhaps you saw this, a conversation around the way that Ford was pitching the truck. The advertisement showed just regular folks getting in their truck, doing trucky truck things, you know, hauling stuff. And, you know, the voiceover explained it was an electric truck and then said, and by the way, our truck can power your house if the lights go out. And I think the tone of the conversation around that was that Ford wasn't talking up the environmental aspect of this. And we haven't touched on it very much. But it was almost as if Ford was doing something wrong by not sufficiently talking up the environmental aspect, the how this is good for the planet. And I wonder if, in a way, the trucks are right there on that cutting edge of the culture wars here. Alex, you probably heard of, what do they call it, coal running or something like that?
Coal rolling, yes.
Coal rolling, yeah. Yeah, what is that for those who are uninformed?
I'm not sure I can explain what's actually happening. All I know is that you've got a truck and you've got a way to make an outrageous amount of exhaust pour out of it, and that people like pulling up in front of Priuses and coal rolling them and enveloping them in shrouds of smoke. And it's awful.
But in a way, if the future of electric vehicles is going to be the truck, I wonder if that says that we've already sort of reached a tipping point when it comes to acceptance of the truck and acceptance of electric vehicles in many respects, because they're just better. I mean, when I say they're just better, they have enormous torque. And anyone who's ever driven, like, for instance, a Tesla, the power is absolutely addictive. If you have any kind of Jones to go fast, this will get you there fast. So I wonder, have we already sort of breached that sort of culture war wall here, or is that still part of the conversation around electric vehicles? Josh, what do you think?
I mean, I think pretty soon we're going to have people pulling up in their big trucks, enveloping Priuses in electricity. I don't know. I do think that truck ownership is truly where push will come to shove in terms of a culture war, right? Because I think that Ford, I think it is maybe a business savvy move to not talk about the environment, because I think when you're buying a truck to date, your priority in transportation is not the environment, right? It's like a different kind of need or a different kind of priority. So like I think selling people trucks for the reasons they buy trucks rather than not a reason they buy trucks makes sense to me. I mean, the environmental element to me is paramount to the business element. But if you're trying to get trucks in the driveways of people, you want to go, hey, here's why you like trucks. This is what our truck does. Rather than like, hey, we want a truck. We've got a truck that's good for the environment. Like, yeah, if our priority was a vehicle that's good for the environment, we would be driving a car one third this size already.
Yeah. Alex, how do you see it?
It's the automotive version of the impossible burger. It's the impossible truck.
Yes. It is because, and I don't say that pejoratively, I think there are needs that people have for their vehicle or desires that people have that in on a one person, you know, on an individual level, supersede a person's desire to benefit the environment, sometimes for personally good reasons. If you need a truck for work, for like hauling a lot of stuff, you're like, how much does this truck haul, rather than like, okay, what are my emissions? And then does it do the thing I need it to do? Because like, if you want to have the fewest emissions, you can sit still in a truck that doesn't go anywhere.
I'm curious though. Do you think the Lightning's going to be a success, Alex? Does that sound like it's a winner for Ford? And I wonder, do you think it can? You think it'll beat the Cybertruck? It certainly will beat it to market.
I do think it'll be a success. I don't know how exactly Ford is going to measure success, because the thing they won't tell anybody is how many they actually plan to make, which will translate to how many they think they can actually sell. But the reaction in terms of reservations looks really positive for them. And they've got a key advantage over Tesla and the Cybertruck, which is that they are going to build this thing. Like, they will actually make it, and you'll actually be able to buy it and take it home with you. And Tesla, whatever they give you in terms of deadlines and in terms of promises, you've got to put like the whole, you've got to like unscrew the cap of the salt shaker and then pour that on there, because they never make deadlines. Elon Musk has broken every promise he's ever given about autonomous vehicles. And, you know, it's hard to tell how real the Cybertruck really is.
I don't know if you guys heard about this, but Ford recently announced it's breaking its business into two arms, right? There's going to be one for gas-powered vehicles, environmentally friendly, sensitive, et cetera. They add a lot of marketing speak to the gas-powered vehicles. Ford Blue is what they're calling it. And then they're going to have another arm for electric vehicle production. What do you guys think of this move?
I think it makes business sense. Electric vehicles require different kinds of R&D. They're made somewhat differently. The marketing has to change a little bit, so the separation can be helpful. Some investors wanted Ford to go further, and, oh, sorry, I just used their slogan there. Ford declined to go further and said it wouldn't spin off the EV business, which would have been a great way to raise money and have a crazy valuation. But they don't actually need to raise money. They're going to keep selling gas pickup trucks. And with that other arm of the business, Ford Blue, they're just going to, over time, cannibalize it and just take all of the money it makes and put that into electric vehicles. And that's how they kind of manage the transition.
Yeah. So assuming that you have the parking and assuming that you have the charging capability and all the money in the world, what would be your car? What would be your electric vehicle right now if you had to buy?
Gosh, I mean, I feel like I'm such a modest dreamer, but like, gosh, I wish they would make like a 2012 Honda Civic, but electric.
I like that. Maybe you're onto something there, Alex. What about you? What's your dream EV?
Oh, I don't know about dream EV. I think something like the Mach-E is really nice and somewhat out of my price range. The Lucid Air looks fantastic. Lucid is one of this bumper crop of electric vehicle startups trying to be the next Tesla, and that thing looks fantastic. I think the most realistic vehicle for me is like a Chevrolet Bolt, the Bolt with a B, the all-electric one, about 250 miles of range, which is good. you know, at least enough for now. And when the Bolt first came out, the thing I wrote about it at the time was the Bolt is, it's like a sitting economy in a plane, but in a new plane, right? It's not first class. It's not luxury, but the seat is pretty nice. You've got a good TV screen. Like it's comfortable. Like it's better than what came before.
Well, you guys have been wonderful guests talking about electric vehicles, and I really do appreciate you taking time to talk with us on this Best of Business Wars episode. We've been talking about electric vehicles with journalist Alex Davies and comedian and TV writer Josh Gondelman. Before we let you guys go, Alex, where can we find you?
You can find my work and the work of my terrific team at businessinsider.com/transportation. You can find me on Twitter at adavies47, and you can buy my book, Driven, about the creation of the autonomous car, anywhere books are sold.
Josh, what about if people want to find more of your stuff?
Oh, I'm easy to find. I'm at Josh Gondelman on Twitter and Instagram. Desus and Mero is Thursday nights at 11 on Showtime, and I hope people check it out. And we're back now. And I also have a book called Nice Try, Stories of Best Intentions and Mixed Results. And that's just an essay collection. There's no science there, but I hope you check it out and you enjoy it. So thank you.
Josh Gondelman, Alex Davies, thanks to you both. We certainly do appreciate it. Lest there be any lingering doubt about the EV revolution in the auto industry, one need only consider how some of Detroit's legacy car manufacturers are thinking about the future. Take Ford's EV spinoff we were talking about earlier. It's called Ford Model E. That's not a single car, but a whole new EV line. Its name is actually an homage to a humble little car that made Ford a global automotive superpower, the Model T. When the first 10 Lizzie rolled off the assembly line more than 100 years ago, it heralded a massive shift in what had been up to that point a dogfight among dozens and dozens of automotive startups, each trying to seize market share at a time when it appeared obvious to everyone that fortunes were to be made. That was then. What was really important about the Model T was not that it was especially reliable, luxurious, or comfortable. It was affordable. It was a car everyday folks could put in their garage, not just dream about. Thanks in large part to that single vehicle, Ford would become one of only a handful of American auto companies to survive those early years. Now you fast forward to today's EV landscape. Beyond Tesla, there's Lucid, Rivian, Faraday, Canoo, Fisker, Forth. I could go on and on. Countless other EV manufacturers, all charging forward with big dreams about the future of personal transportation. Sound familiar? Though Tesla seems unusually well situated to capitalize from its trailblazing position, car making is a brutally competitive industry, and the marketplace is incredibly fickle. From Studebakers to Saturns, DeSotos to DeLoreans, one-time kings of the road, have fizzled and failed. In the battle between Tesla and Detroit, there are many miles yet to go before we see where this story eventually takes us. And so, fasten your seatbelts. Next on Business Wars, the big automakers battle a rogue Silicon Valley upstart for EV dominance. That's our new season of Business Wars starting next week. Tesla versus Detroit. We hope you'll join us. Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is the Best of Business Wars Daily. I'm your host, David Brown. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Produced by Emily Frost and Jess Yarmosky. Sound designed by Kyle Randall. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
I'm I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former sports center anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.